I know I'm so much more, but I do have this like public facing currency that is changing. And in a couple of years, it's going to be different. And I know it's not going to be this drastic change, but like, it's very scary because part of my identity is linked to this. And how do I almost unlink my identity or come to terms with that I am, my physical body is going to change?
You are allowed to be whole. Allowed.
When you were born, you were whole. Perfect. And somewhere along the way, you learned that parts of you were not allowed here. What are the pieces of you that you've put into the basement? The parts of you that we cannot see anymore or that you cannot even remember? And how can you reclaim the wholeness that is your birthright? I'm Dr. Camille Joyce, and I'm here to join you in exploring these questions and many more you didn't even know you were allowed to ask. You are allowed to grow. You are allowed to dream. You are allowed to be exactly who you are and to become the next version of who you want to be. Start your journey of exploration with me right now on Allowed.
Hi, this is your host, Camille Joyce, and welcome to Allowed. I'm looking at a beautiful human being right now. All of these episodes, we always record them on video as well as audio. And this one in particular, I think is worth you going back and going to our YouTube channel, or you can actually access the video at allowedpodcast.com so that you can gaze your eyes on the lovely Brittany Allen. Brittany, thank you for joining us. And really, you know, this is one of those ones where people talk about the beauty coming in, like coming out from the inside. And I can tell you that the way I feel around Brittany is incredibly free, inspired, playful, loving, and just seen. And if you want to see where that took me, then check out the bonus episode for this particular podcast, because Brittany just walked me through a makeup tutorial where I began no makeup after a long night of partying. And she guided me and we got to like gal pal. And I'm telling you right now, is we're recording this on June 4th, which is my dad's 75th birthday. Oh. And we're coming out of COVID. So I feel like I just got to have a slumber party and I really miss that. And I miss being with my girls. And so she's a new girl in my life. And I'm so excited to have you here, Brittany. Before we begin, I'd like to just do a few brags for you. Brittany is a highly intelligent, unusually intelligent. I would consider you an influencer, you know, online media influencer. She's got gazillions of sponsorships, I'm presuming, because I've seen a lot of her videos, and there's no way that you would not want to purchase anything that she plugs. And her approach is so natural and fun and humble. And so we're going to talk today about beauty. So Brittany also has a really great blog website, and it's called 30 Waves. Mm-hmm. And it's about being in your 30s. And it's very, very unique. I want you to talk about some of that content today. And in addition to all of that, mm-hmm. and creating content every single day that goes online, which is just so brave to me. She also has a startup. And so we're going to hear about Brittany's journey. We're going to talk about beauty and aging and what all of that means. And we're going to just get to know her. So thank you so much, Brittany, for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me. And that was such a sweet, beautiful intro. I really appreciate it. And it's nice to hear that you think such nice thoughts. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
So I am currently 35. I'm single. I grew up in Seattle and then moved down to SF around 25 after grad school and got into the tech boom, moved to London for a little bit. And now I've been in New York the past 5 years. So I've lived this pretty adventurous life, kind of always wanting the best out of things and experiencing life and people in the world. with that comes kind of a different timeline of like not really settling down and having kids at 27 and the pressures with that, which I'm sure we'll get into. So I started a blog called 30 Waves about the ups and downs of being in your 30s and really talking about what, you know, the amazing parts of my life and the decisions I've made, but also the really hard parts too that come with this. Mm-hmm. And there are really hard parts.
Hmm. The decisions you've made, are you're referring to any particular decisions?
Not settling, dating, relationships.
Not settling. Settling down or not settling for something?
Probably both.
Okay.
I would say, but not settling, not going for mediocre things in my life, you know, and knowing that if I wait longer, it might be harder, but I hope that there's a bigger return. So that's what I try to talk about, is to kind of empower women. Like, there are positive and negatives that come with every decision in your life and where you're at in life. And I try to highlight this angle that, being in your mid 30s isn't such a scary thing.
I really love how in your work, you talk about the things that I think a lot of people, are not talking about. And they are, but they are thinking about nonstop. And to me, you're highlighting some issues that really shape the experience of being in a female body. In particular, your conversations that you've had around fertility and options around fertility. And here's a guide to how to freeze your eggs and how to think about that. Here's your actual likelihood of conceiving at this age, this age, this age. Here's how that declines. I mean, I remember when I was in my early 30s, shortly after getting married, everyone's like, oh, you know, wait, you should wait, you know, have fun, which I did. You know, and I was, I'm like, I'm all about like, I want to have as much fun as possible, like all of the time. And, you know, similar story too. I mean, moving to San Francisco, startups, moving to London. And then suddenly something happened. I passed some certain age. I don't know if like my first fine line showed up, but I don't know what it was, but suddenly it was like every time we went to an event, all the women, like including, you know, these are like professors that I used to work with and mentors of mine. And, you know, the ladies at the Seder, like everyone's telling me I should get on it. Don't stop. Don't wait. Have kids right away. And I was like, where's the gray zone here? You know, when I didn't have the data, I didn't think I needed to even look into the data on how my fertility was going to be affected.
Yeah. It feels like it is like a switch. You know, I went to dinner with my aunt, who's one of my closest friends and people in my life. And she turns 70 this weekend. And I was, I'm half her age. And I asked her life advice. Her first thing was freeze your eggs right now. You know, it's like, it's a topic that I think probably runs by my head every day or every other day. So it's a very real thing, but like 2 years ago, probably not, but it's like, once you hit like 34, 35, everyone's like in this crazy rush and it's a lot of pressure.
It is. And I think that's something that impacts dating too. And maybe it's, and this is probably why I want to talk about this piece briefly on the show, is because a lot of women don't know about how quickly fertility starts to deteriorate and how really every month chances of conceiving are lower at a certain point. I forget what the kind of tipping point is there.
Yeah, it's around 37. Yeah, well, that's the thing too is, so I was a matchmaker. My background is also kind of in dating and dating tech. I've worked for like fashion tech companies, restaurant tech companies. But the past few years has been in dating tech, and that's really kind of my passion. I'm just a hopeless romantic. Mm-hmm. And I ran a dating app owned by one of the biggest dating companies, Bumble. And then I also became a matchmaker for almost 2 years. And this is where I was really fascinated to learn about fertility, because I would have these clients that were like 50 that wanted to only date women that were under 27. Because they haven't had a kid yet, and they are very strict on like this age of women. But the truth is too, that men's fertility and the health of their sperm also changes as they get older. But society doesn't really talk about that. They just talk about women aging, and it's almost like it's on us, you know?
Yes.
So I started researching a lot about fertility and found a lot of new surprising statistics that are a lot more hopeful for women in their 30s, and also to hold men accountable too, that yes, they can conceive at 70 or 80 years old, but it's the health of the sperm is not the same as they were in their 30s either. So it takes two to tango in a way.
Interesting. I can't help but think about, so my husband, who's an amazingly soulful person, you know, when I met him, he was coming to actually pick up my roommate for a date. We were outside the dorms at UCLA, and I knew that she was upstairs getting ready, and I was like coming back from the dining hall, and I was like, I think it was like a very low makeup day too. And I was wearing a sweatshirt, and so he comes and picks her up. I think he's wearing a toga, and cause this is like, you know,
we sounds about right.
Yeah. Did that in the Greek system back then. And I like looked in his eyes, and I was like, whoa, I can see right through him. Like I can see like his soul. Whoa. And like, I just like this person. And it wasn't I didn't feel like, oh, I'm lusting after this person, or like I might ever date him. He was coming to pick up my roommate who I was really good friends with. But I just had this instant, like, I like you. I trust you. And it wasn't until we began dating a couple years ago, like after my roommate was deep in another relationship, and she was supportive of this. But then he revealed to me, I remember we were at a party and he showed me a driver's license in his wallet, and it wasn't his, it was his father's, who I knew, was dead. Mm-hmm. He died when Roy was in high school, cancer, but he showed me his driver's license. He said, look at his date of birth. And it was 1904. So Roy's dad had him when he was in his 70s. Yeah. And his mom is in her 20s.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I felt like I was like, oh, I get it. I understand why you're so different and like have this depth.
Yeah.
That I've never come across before. Mm-hmm. And so my head just went there when you talk about it. It's like, it is doable.
Yeah.
And I love this idea of surfacing. Like, it's not like it doesn't matter. Also it's, there's impact, and it's a shared responsibility.
It's kind of a catch 22, because I think it's great to have children later in life as well, because you bring this life experience, you know, of having 70 years of life and teaching a new soul everything you've learned. Mm-hmm. Maybe he wasn't a new soul, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In this life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's beautiful. And like, I always think about the things that I'm going to be able to teach my children about living in different cities, meeting as many people as I have, like just the life experience, even the ups and downs in my 30s, I hope can somehow teach her, you know, inspire her, save her from some pain that I might've had. Mm-hmm. I think age is good, but it's just a shared responsibility. And I think fertility in general shouldn't just be the stress of just only on females, I guess.
Yeah. And I think it also plays into, you know, the value of a Saturday night. And I have some friends that after a divorce on a date, they realize like, I need to find a husband right now and I want to get pregnant. And so I'm going to start asking them like pretty early on, do you also want kids? And are you looking for marriage or not? And is it coming on strong? Like, yes, probably. But also I empathize with, there's only 52 Saturday nights in a year. And a year from now, I'll be in a different place. And it's like, Yeah, I want to know.
Exactly. So this is exactly what my startup is about.
Tell me all about your startup.
It's called Scoops, and it's bringing transparency to the dating app world and also empowering people to speak their truth about their dating goals and desires. So exactly this, because the fact of the matter is like, okay, I do not recommend anyone sitting down within 5 minutes being like, do you want children? Wow. Mm-hmm. In how many years, how many months? Like, mm-hmm. No one wants to feel like an interview.
Yeah.
I understand that. Mm-hmm. But we all have kind of these goals in our minds and timelines and certain lifestyles that we do want to know. And I think dating culture has almost perpetuated, let's be even more fake online and have filtered photos,
yeah,
and have the perfect text crafted, mm-hmm. and the emotional exhaustion that comes with this of matching, getting excited about a date, talking for a week, telling your friends that you're going on a date, only to find out in like 30 minutes, it's such a mismatch.
Yeah.
It's just, because back in the day, people met through friends of friends. It was a little bit more organic. And now it's just, I want to save people pain and I just want to bring more transparency to the dating app world. So I'm working on a product that basically is a smart link with AI that you basically fill out what I call are 10 of the most important questions that determine long-term compatibility, whether that is how you spend your discretionary time, how you view social issues, timelines for marriage and children, where you're at with that, your party social lifestyle, and your goals in the next 3 months. And I don't think it should ever be 6 months or longer, because I think people tend to say, oh, you know, maybe by the end of the year, I could be in a relationship. But it's like, no, but if you met someone in the next 2-3 months, July or August, like, are you willing to give it a shot? Mm-hmm. And invest time with one person if it feels right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And remind me of what is your master's degree in? This sounds well researched.
But my master's degree is in public policy. So
public policy.
Very different.
Very different.
I was a comm major. And then public policy is still about people and learning about the world.
Yeah.
And
it's about how policy, I can totally see the public policy in you. I mean, it's about how rules and structures shape behavior and beliefs, and mm-hmm. how do you nudge people in a certain direction? And so I think you're seeing, and this is mm-hmm. like one of my favorite, this is why I'm so attracted to technology and I'm so fascinated by social media platforms, is because the existence of a technology shapes society.
Right. Yeah, it is. But I never thought about this, but you're right.
So you're like, in a way, you're an activist creating this to create transparency in dating is such a big deal. Such yeah. a big, so it's, I see the vision and it's very compelling.
Thank you.
Where are you in this, what, you know, how's your startup doing? How are you growing?
So we are in kind of the beta testing round. The beta testing product finished in February. And we've had several beta testers to just test it out, get data from it. And right now we are starting to talk to investors, and raise a seed round.
Amazing.
So still very new. I have found in beta testing that a lot of women and men too, are afraid to talk about their desires because they think they're going to be rejected.
Yeah.
But the right guy will align with you. Men are human as well. They have emotions. And like, if a guy doesn't want to fill out your, it's like a smart link right now, but like, if he doesn't want to take 2 minutes to get to know you and your dating goals, mm-hmm. he's probably not there in general to get to know you, or he has very different dating goals. And it's like, you need to remember that you are a goddess and you deserve the best, and mm-hmm. speak up even just a little bit for yourself, you know, because you deserve to.
Yeah.
And I'm also at the age where I'm just like, cut the bullshit. Like mm-hmm. I'm 35. Like, if I am not wasting my time, yes. I have dated the fuck boys, pardon my language. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, I've been treated really badly in relationships. I'm sure I've treated people badly as well, but like, I am over that. I'm all about just let's get down to the real shit and be happy in our lives.
Heck yes. I'm so excited for you. And we'll definitely link to Scooped in the Scoop in the show notes so that everyone can try that out. And I love that it's a smart link so that when it sounds like no matter what platform you're using for your dating, you can leverage that.
Yeah. You could even, if you met someone at a party, you could send it to them in a text message. And the real product, I think it's going to be, it'll be even more fascinating and more of like a psychological compatibility fun thing where you kind of just like bump your phones together and see if you're compatible.
Oh my gosh,
but in a fun, like safe way. So we have a lot of great goals.
That is so cool. That is so cool. I love it. Oh my gosh. If only I were dating, I could try it to find out if my husband and I are compatible.
Oh, you can still take it. Yeah.
I'd love to chat since we're talking about age here. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we discussed on our last call, just you and me, was around, relating to our beauty. And this is something I asked if you'd be willing to talk about. And I really loved your response and I'm happy to remind you what it was, but, I don't think I shared with you my backstory with this. And I want to share that briefly. And then I want to dig into beauty and age.
Okay.
I'm a person who loves pleasure. And the way that I received a lot of my pleasure growing up was two big ways. One was being on stage. So acting, singing, dancing. I love an audience. I love it so much. I love being on stage. I love performance. I really come alive in performing. And that's why I love my job. The second way was eating. And I've always been really into swimming, but I was on the swim team for a bit there in high school. And I remember swimming makes you really, really hungry. So I'd get home from school and after having had like regular lunch, I would eat like an entire box of Captain Crunch cereal plus like a carton of Haagen-Dazs. I probably ate like about a carton of Haagen-Dazs a day and then go to Taco Bell. Or I remember like on our break between, before rehearsal or whatever, like jamming over to Jamba Juice and Noah's Bagels, which were right next to each other, and having both with the chocolate chips and and then maybe we pick up a big burrito as well, like which was also next door. So and I we were just into eating, and so we ate so much, and I started working at a bread store, and then game over. So I gained a ton of weight, but I didn't really bother me because I always considered myself like sexy, and I wasn't really kind of totally conscious of it. Which I think I credit my mom with. That was just not the culture I was totally raised in. But there was also my mom was a dieter. And that's what everyone was doing back in the 90s. And so it was that flip-flopping between overeating and dieting that, you end up gaining a lot of weight. So I was like quite a bit heavier by the end of high school. And while I had boyfriends here and there, but it was nothing too, I didn't consider myself, I was like, okay, I'm not one of those people. Then I went to college, was not on the swim team, eating in the dorms, scheduled eating. And I lost like 20 pounds, 25 pounds without even trying. And then I became obsessed because the world around me changed.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, oh my God, like this is unbelievable amount of power.
Yeah. So like, you were conditioned that your looks would buy it. It's a form of currency.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also I was still trying to act. And so it was like, I was in Hollywood. I grew up in Los Angeles. And so there was just such a culture around being thin, being beautiful. And I felt like I really can't succeed in Hollywood unless I lose a ton of weight. And that will destroy me because I can tell how obsessed I am with this already. But I was very obsessed and disordered eating. But I also wow, the world is just really, really different when you are thin and beautiful. And I had so much fun with it, and it totally got to my head. And then I finally learned, like after moving to Europe, I finally learned how to eat intuitively in a way that was healthy. And like, I didn't have that feeling of like fat growing on my thighs constantly, which was like creepy crawly skin feeling of disordered eating. So if this is something that I real, and I always thought this would be a great book. I'm not going to write it, because who wants to come out in on stage and say, I think I'm beautiful. People will hate me. Mm-hmm. And so when we met, I said, would you be open to talking about what it's like to be beautiful? And I think you said, you remember what you said?
Remind me.
It was something to the effect of, I don't really talk about that. Maybe like with my close friends and family.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to be out there saying that I'm beautiful, which is why I'm going to say it for you a bunch of times so that you have so much permission. And so I want you to talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, immediately my heart stops because it's so weird. Like, I feel like I've been celebrated with my looks and I've had a lot of opportunities, but it's almost a secret thing that like, I'm still not allowed to really talk about. Like, I can talk about beauty. I can talk about makeup. But if I say, I think I'm pretty, everyone's like, oh, this bitch, this like, you know, there's like a narcissistic label instantly put on. And yeah, it's just kind of uncomfortable. And I also think that there are other insecurities that I have too. Sometimes when you are a pretty person, other people don't take the full side of you, like, and like on the inside. I remember in grad school, I would get up in front of the class and I would be talking about something very serious, like some policy of related to NAFTA or something. And people would just start giggling and laughing. And I would say, why are you guys laughing? Like, I'm not saying anything funny. They're like, oh, Brittany, you're just so cute. You know?
So really dismissing you as a whole person and putting you with a little label that's diminutive.
Right. And so I think that perpetuates, okay, well, maybe I won't show that side of myself so much.
Yeah.
I'll use my appearance. And because a lot of people that know me, they're like, Britt, the you on social media, it's part of you, but like the real you is even more magical. And I'm a pretty complex person, but I don't think I show that. And it's probably just conditioned over time.
That resonates. I remember, yes, being kind of once I got beautiful, and again, like I'm on the other side of that life phase now. Mm-hmm. I'm 43. My face is covered in COVID vaccine induced adult acne. I'm a mom of two. Like, I don't look the same. And once I aged, people started taking me seriously again. And I didn't need to prove how smart I was for people to kind of like at least give me the benefit of the doubt and listen to me.
Yeah.
But man, I got my PhD at Berkeley because I wanted to finally be freaking credible.
Yeah.
And I was so sick of being dismissed.
Yeah.
And like, there's, you know, you get access, you know, you go to the front of the line at a club. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. There's a head rush there. But there's like it's almost like you don't want to see how much judgment is coming at you, because it's both like personally upsetting, but it's also like deeply disturbing at a societal level. Mm-hmm. The way that, just how superficial that is.
How do you think that you were dismissed? Or when you talk about being dismissed.
Yeah. So it was, there's a very like quick to judge, like quick to like want to tear you down. Mm-hmm. Like, and again, I feel self-conscious talking about this, like for the same reason is I don't want to be, perceived as arrogant or self-inflated. Mm-hmm. You know, but, and I think I'll post some pictures on the show notes here so I can give some proof. used to be really good looking, but I think I still am.
You
it's
are.
Different. It's different, right? But you can tell I'm older and it just helps so much. So how was I dismissed? It was things like, after spending an evening with me, people would say, whoa, you're actually really smart.
Yeah. Like, every time.
Why
every
is that
day.
A surprise? Mm-hmm. Like I've been behaving the same with you, but I mean, it was like such a consistent comment and it always came with surprise and confusion. But at first it was that like eye roll kind of like, you know, sitting back, looking at like judging, giggling, going through my PhD program, like no one wanted to be my friend. Mm-hmm. It felt really like I was very, very, very dismissed and isolated. And I think it was partly the looks thing. And it was a large part that I'm just so not I'm a very academic kind of person, but I am so not built like a professor on the inside because it's just not my zone of genius. I'm a 4. I'm a type 4 in the Enneagram. I'm flowy. I'm like wild and expressive and creative and flighty. And I lose track of what I'm talking about all of the time. I don't even know what topic we're on right now.
Yeah.
If I have to be super structured, like I had to learn to be then, mm-hmm. I can't, like all of my genius gets cramped inside of me and it like hurts. And I didn't know that at the time, but then all the back pain started and all of the just inner, like cramping down and not mm-hmm. allowing me to be mm-hmm. who I am. Mm-hmm. And part of it was that like I seem to be being judged negatively by everybody and presumed that I'm stupid.
In a way too, it perpetuates insecurities. Like, let's say like you knew you were good at baseball, but like you play basketball all the time and people were like, you're the best basketball player, you know, but like you really loved baseball, but every time you did baseball, they're like, yeah, but you're really good at basketball, you know? And I feel like it's a little bit of that. Like if I talk about kind of even serious subjects with people, it's sometimes more short-lived because they just kind of want the superficial fun, Brittany. Mm-hmm. And I'm really not superficial. Like I will talk about beauty and stuff, but like, if you sit down with me for 30 minutes, we're not going to be talking about celebrity gossip or I don't even know what I'm thinking that superficial is, but
right.
It's like, I feel like I've probably just like learned that to keep other sides of me inside because I'm not praised for that. I'm not encouraged as much, I guess.
Yeah. And feeling dismissed, it's like a rejection. Mm-hmm. Like I personally learned to avoid that rejection. Mm-hmm. And I did that partly by avoiding eye contact. Like I didn't want to see people looking at me that way.
Mm, I think I probably do that too.
So also I didn't want to get picked up on all the time. I was afraid if I make eye contact, then this man's going to follow me around and it'll be,
I think that all the time.
I won't be able to get my work done. Like I won't be able to get to class. I'll be in this awkward conversation. His ego will be all like involved and I might like hurt his feelings. I would rather just not notice people. Luckily, I'm not great at finding faces in crowds anyway. It's like a serious problem. So I would just walk around and I remember my boyfriend's friend before he knew me called me the ice princess because he just thought I was cool. But I'm like, I'm just trying to walk through campus. Like I'm just trying to not get picked up on while I walk through campus. And I don't want to see people looking at me that way. It's like embarrassing.
Yeah. I am the same way living in New York too. I mean, I think girls in general, if you respond to the catcalls, like guys are probably going to, you know, you give an inch, they take a mile, but, I'm the same way. I think I've also struggled with a lot of social anxiety too, because I mean, that's probably more of just like my childhood. But I think there's a part of it where I do have this kind of shy side as well. That I didn't know how to handle mm-hmm. everything going on. And so I shut down a bit.
I recently got in touch with I finally accepted like my shy, like I am shy. Mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. am, mm-hmm. but it's very uncomfortable to walk through the world shy. Mm-hmm. And it's uncomfortable to walk through the world looking shy when, you know, my belief has been, I'm supposed to be confident all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's like a good or bad, you know, it's like extroversion is better than introversion. Shy is bad. This is kind of what we're taught, you know, and it means like lack of confidence and it, yeah. I understand what you're saying.
And also people, I think it's like, you don't want to connect with me, you know, like, so people are like, well, she doesn't even want to talk. And then it's like, you add the pretty thing and mm-hmm. it's like, who's that bitch? She's not even, yeah. She just thinks she's better than everybody.
Yeah. You know? And if you are extroverted, then it's like, yeah, then it's even more like, who is this bitch just talking and who does she think she right. is, you know?
And then
like,
you start avoiding eye contact. So you don't have to see that. Cause you're like, I'm just trying to get through life. Like I'm just yeah. trying to get through life. And it's like, it's not a, you know, it's a blessing. Mm-hmm. It's a blessing. And I think it's important for us to share this with folks because I think a lot of people feel this way. And I think also there's a lot of people who maybe like, and I think I'm in particular, I'd like to speak to people who date women that this might be going on and that it's something just to be aware of.
Women are already so, most women are really stressed out about their looks. Mm-hmm. And as we age, it just, I mean, I even catch myself like talking about anti-aging. We are mm-hmm. fighting against it every yes. single day in terms of going back to like eating, exercise, everything is just this anti-aging. We need to look hot, young.
Young is hot.
Young Hailey Bieber's. That's all, you know, what people want to achieve. And it's like, it's not reality. And I'm now that I'm 35 too, it's something that I'm terrified of. I've talked to my therapist. I was like, I know I'm so much more, but I do have this like public facing currency that is changing. And mm-hmm. in a couple of years, it's going to be different. And I know it's not going to be this drastic change, but like, it's very scary because part of my identity is linked to this. And how do I almost unlink my identity or come to terms with that? My physical body is going to change. Mm-hmm. And one thing that really helped, she said, when you think of your mother or your aunt that I'm close with, do you think they're beautiful? And I was like, I think they're the most beautiful women in the world. Even mm-hmm. as they get older, they are just, I'm so proud that they're my mom and aunts. And I mm-hmm. think they're just beautiful, strong women. And she's like, well, that's what people are going to think of you. Like mm-hmm. they're different, beautiful. It's not a 27 to 32 beautiful. It's mm-hmm. a 55 to 60 beautiful, you know? And yeah. so I think changing your concept of beauty and having it tied to youth is something that you need to work through as we get older.
Yeah. It's so fascinating how much we couple these things, the idea in society that for some reason, beauty and brains are opposites and that, you know, even like being, if you're fun, that means you must not be that smart. If you're smart, it means you must be serious. If you're smart, it means you must not be attractive. If you're, you know, young, it must mean that you are, you know, you need to be beautiful. And age like means that you're definitely not beautiful. And it's like these twisty, tied up associations. It's why do they need to be there? And like needing to hide a part of yourself so that it complies with those expectations is a form of, and I just want to name this, you know, it is a form of oppression. And I've talked about oppression a bit on this show, and in particular, specifically, I know around the experience of being female and a woman. And that I wanted to be really clear that we very quickly become, if we take that on and make it personal and about ourselves and we believe it and buy into it and those stories become the stories that we're telling ourselves, we are oppressing ourselves. And so like from the standpoint of being conscious and being leaders in our lives and taking 100% responsibility for our own choices, our own stories, like we need to acknowledge that, one piece of responsibility is doing our own work around dismantling these stories at the same time as being gentle in that I didn't write this story, but now I'm telling the story. I didn't write it. I was given it. I was taught this story. I see it reinforced all around me. But now I need to choose. do I want to keep telling that story to myself again and again? And if I do, and I very well, it may be just such a deep habit, I kind of can't break out of it. But if I do keep telling it, then I can make a choice. How do I want to respond to myself when I do that? So I love this, your awareness, Brittany, of this choice that you found yourself making, that to hide your intelligence, and it just was not palatable or as well received. Because that's the kind of self-awareness, I think, when we can recognize how we're contributing to keeping ourselves small, that's the kind of self-awareness that we can use to regain that power that we are giving away and losing. And I know that's been a really cool part of aging for me. It's like, oh, like each realization I have of a new way that I'm the one keeping myself small. I'm the one judging myself. Like that's where freedom comes from. I also want to acknowledge that, we're talking a lot about, there are some really interesting and nuanced downsides to being considered attractive by society. It may be that, when you walk into a room and everyone assesses you one way and they have stereotypes and judgments and, oh, you must be this way. And it's like, oh, poor me, poor us. Like, this is so, so hard. The thing is that it's that thing of like getting to the front of the line outside of a busy nightclub, you still got to get in, you got to get in the door. And I want to like really underscore that, being considered attractive is a massive form of privilege and comes with, all the things that privilege comes with. And one of the biggest things privilege comes with is ignorance as to what it's like to be any different way. This is why I consider myself fortunate that I even got to have that experience of like being heavier and then losing weight. And like, whoa, what, that's a difference. It revealed to me that there is this power structure in place, something that I wasn't really aware of before. And I also want to acknowledge that, I'm lucky I wasn't aware of that before, because I think that it's really pretty impossible to go through life and not realize what a privilege being considered attractive is and how much access it grants you. And that it's hard not to have that access and to see how it's unequally, access is unequally distributed and admiration is unequally distributed, and being considered attractive like bears so many fruits and gifts, hence our ridiculous hour long routine, right? Because it's like you said, it's currency, and we are really fortunate to have had an experience of having that currency. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing, I think it was, maybe it was Sophia Loren talking about this like 20 years ago of, I don't wear eye concealer. I think dark circles are sexy. Mm-hmm. I love my wrinkles. Mm-hmm. I think they're sexy. Mm-hmm. And like, dude, damn, that girl, like, yes.
She was sexy, but yes.
Yes. And it's the sexy that comes from the inside.
Yeah.
But she's a freaking beautiful specimen. Mm-hmm. Completely, but mm-hmm. also it's this like relishing. She relishes herself. Like she loves, she enjoys herself. Yeah,
it vibrates. Like you can feel that, yeah. Even in photos 20 years, 30 years later, whatever.
Yeah.
It's really,
and true. I just, I definitely do the anti-aging thing. And then I fall asleep with my makeup on almost every night. And I don't enjoy the routine as much like I used to. It feels more like a should, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which is partly why I let myself not do it so much. But I think my face does reveal easily my emotions, and this is it's a blessing and a curse. I think it's like part of my signature. And I want my face wrinkles to reveal, who I am as my best self. And I want them to show me that I have been like thoughtful and kind, and like I've laughed a lot, you know?
Let's see. Yeah.
And then, but partly I don't want them to show how angry I've been and how annoyed or whatever. I don't want them to show how tense I've been, which I have been. And I remember there was a time where suddenly my kids were always like, "Why are you so angry, mommy?" And then I got Botox and I deleted the 11 lines that were, they're called 11 lines. There's names for every wrinkle, by the way, every single wrinkle, and they go in between your eyebrows. And I was like, I was so against doing it. So against doing it. And then I decided I don't want to look angry all the time when I'm not. And then they stopped saying that. I'm like, well, this works. No, I haven't had that updated like in a very long time, but I do notice I have more smile lines. And because of wearing the masks in COVID, I decided that is my smile now, because you can't see my mouth. Mm-hmm. And so if I can't smile with my eyes, you don't know I'm smiling at you.
Yeah.
I'm keeping them.
I really try to look at beauty. And like, I was talking about this on my Instagram about like hot girl summer, like yesterday actually. And like hot girl summer is 100% not about men or what anyone thinks. Like, it is about feeling hot for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really try to focus on in terms of beauty. I'm not really doing this for men, I guess. It's great to get the attention and stuff, but like, I like to just feel good. And maybe it has to do with my social anxiety, but like when I feel good, I am able to be myself more. Mm-hmm. And, so even going back to like Botox and stuff, like a guy probably isn't going to like say no to a date because like I have some forehead wrinkles, maybe some guys, but like, I don't do it. I think it's fine to do it if it just makes you happy. It makes me happy. I literally like my skin to be smooth.
Yeah.
And who cares? And
it's like, we can't take the stuff.
You're not high and mighty if you don't do it. Like,
right.
You have wrinkles. I don't have wrinkles right now.
Right.
Okay. You're not better than me or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
There shouldn't be shame in it, but it's just, you need to find the place of why you're doing it, I think.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
And also you might not know why. And also there's not a right or wrong reason why, you know? And I'm trying to go for the jugular of, being a woman who likes to look and feel beautiful is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah.
It is fun. And it's self-expression, and don't worry about it. Just like enjoy yourself. Enjoy. Brittany, before we close here, I'd love to ask, is there a question that you might ask our audience to think about? Something important for them to reflect on. A lot of podcast hosts ask for advice. It feels more fitting in this case, given that I think you really embrace the "I don't know," and that it's not perfect, and that we can still intelligently move through things. But you seem to be just a person who's great at questions. So, what question would you like to leave our audience with?
I guess the first one that comes to mind is kind of wrapping up what we were just talking about, which is, if you have insecurities about yourself, like, who are they for? Almost like, sometimes I think about this, like, if I was on a deserted island, would I care about this? I was dating someone last year that was kind of younger, and he wasn't looks wise what I thought, like, people thought that I should be dating or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of thinking about, like, if we were on a deserted island, would I care? And the answer is like, no. And I think a lot of people's insecurities are like, I want to lose weight because I want so-and-so to think highly of me. And I think that's the root of fixing your insecurities, is why do you want to fix this? And who are you fixing it for? Is it your mother? Is it your parents? Is mm-hmm. it your partner? So he gives you more love or attention or mm-hmm. words of affirmation. Like, that is, I think, like a way to find kind of like inner beauty and understanding there. So that's what I would leave, is where and who are you doing these things for in terms of beauty?
Wow.
I have to ask though, like from 35 to 43, okay, that's 8 years. You were in a very similar spot of me in terms of beauty at 35. Now you're 43. You're saying you're coming to terms with it. You're changing your perspective. What is something that you would tell me now as a 35-year-old to almost prepare me for this transition of beauty and changing?
I think the question that you asked our audience is probably one that I began asking myself a lot more. Mm-hmm. And it was about not just my looks. It was like, you know, why do I care about what that person thinks? Like who am I doing these adjustments to myself for on every kind of adjustment, right? Mm-hmm. Who am I exercising for? Who am I going to the psychologist for? I really don't want to do things because the small part of me is afraid that someone's going to judge me. Like I boldly go to places to tackle that, you know, like showing up at the beginning of this with no makeup, because I discovered, oh my gosh, I'm getting so wrapped up in wanting to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the opposite and I'm going to try this out. So I think it's like, I really tried to tear down those barriers before they started bothering me.
Mm-hmm. Where are these fears and cares coming from? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it answers my own kind of question, but
you know, that was dealing with, there were like, oh, you know, I have like acne or I've got some fine lines. Then it started being hard to look good on camera. Mm-hmm. And that's always been very easy for me. Mm-hmm. And my face became asymmetrical all of a sudden. And my mm-hmm. eyes, one would be open, one would be closed. And like, mm-hmm. oh, this social media experiment we've been doing is like horrifying. And, you know, luckily I have a team that can press publish for me because I am not willing. And,
why,
and now it's like,
I think
body,
you have such a good presence.
I love my presence. I do.
Yeah.
Love my presence.
So you shouldn't be worried about social media. Cause the thing is like, you know, you're not this 25-year-old model anymore, but like people love looking at you, hearing you. You don't have to be perfect.
I saw what I looked like from this angle. Cause the camera was capturing it. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know it was like that. And then I decided to change the camera that I'm recording the backup version of this with, like, because it was just like, ugh. And mm-hmm. I didn't know that was going to happen. And then I saw myself from behind the other day, cause I finally have a long mirror again.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
And I was like, who is that? Who is that? Oh. That is not me. And yeah. It's also just coming out of COVID, but how to,
right.
It's not like I've got it all together at all, but it's mm-hmm. also like, it also doesn't matter nearly as much as I thought it was going to matter. Like I care so much less.
That's good.
Than I thought I would.
Yeah. It's probably like, it's just a natural thing. Like you actually don't have the energy to care because you're focused on other things like raising children and your household.
You could walk around caring though. You could walk around being ashamed and embarrassed and scared and mm-hmm. self-conscious. I mean, people, lots of women do while they're parenting. And I'm like, I do not want to pass that along.
Right.
So I tackle it, but I still feel the feelings. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, mm-hmm. but I think the other thing, and my friend, Silvana, who's an old client of mine too, you can follow her on Instagram. She's, Ilvana Say, and she's a comedian. She's an actress. She's gorgeous, but she just had a baby mm-hmm. and she had a video of her doing like baby yoga and you could see like, you know, like she's bigger, like there's, mm-hmm. there's fat there. There's like, you know, her breasts are much bigger. Like she's just a bigger person. Mm-hmm. Because she just had a baby and she's older and but she showed it on purpose to kind of same thing, like learning to love my body now. And I think that after I had a baby, I was like, my body is magic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, screw you guys. I'm a magician.
Yeah.
Did you see what I just did?
Yeah.
I made a human. And then breastfeeding, like that human is made of me. Mm-hmm. That's made of me. Mm-hmm. So cool.
Oh, that is cool.
We've kind of been hinting around this, but it seems so abundantly obvious. And it's actually kind of interesting that we didn't even name this, that this experience seems to be much more of an experience that women have than men. This experience of my looks become the primary thing that people assess me on. my looks are like, it's so strategically important for me how I look, that it's going to make a good day or bad day into a good day and vice versa. There's so much objectification of women, and this is a form of discrimination, and it's a form of bias, and it's a treatment that, you know, men also are judged on how they look. But it seems that there's a much wider range of what's been possible. And I've seen that change a lot even over my life. I mean, like the range of what's appreciated as beauty is way broader than it used to be. But wherever you are, however you consider yourself to be on that spectrum of, attractive to others or not, and it, of course, it changes over time and circumstances, but wherever you are on that spectrum, there are challenges there. And it's because, guess what? From the get-go, you're being assessed much more on your looks than on anything else. So, you know, if you feel that that's not been a privilege that you've been granted, and you consider yourself, well, I'm not attractive. And I believe all human beings are beautiful. And I also recognize that I was given some privilege, and as were you, Brittany. And yeah, that's tough. And there's work for us to do around this. I have an episode on body shame. I will link to in the show notes here that I did a while back. And there was kind of the first place that I ever talked about really like looks and my own looks and my own experience of food and my body. And what I'm trying to point out there is we need to support each other. Like, I really want us to pull together and support each other. And I want men to be very aware of this and as well, but we can choose if we're going to bond over self-blaming and shaming related to our physicality and our body and our looks and our weight and all those things. We can choose if we want to bond over that or not. And putting ourselves down in order to be able to connect with each other. Like that's the thing that I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. Now, then I have this conversation with you, and I think this is so healing. Like, this is exactly the kind of conversation I do want to have. And that feels pretty conscious to me, and as well as totally terrifying, especially thinking other people are going to be listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is it that I'm feeling fear and nervous, and I'm imagining somebody driving in their car and listening to this and just thinking, geez, this person is like blind spots and spoiled brat and complainy, and you know, how dare she talk about this about herself like this? And even I think, like you point, you know, like we talked about at the very beginning of this show, even just acknowledging that I am beautiful. And there's something that's just so sad about that to me right now in this moment. And also I hear it's coming from a drama-based victim place that's like totally fear-based. And that's why I'm daring myself to overcome those stories that I'm telling myself. And I expect that the judgment will happen, and we'll see where we go with it. Then we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you an Enneagram type 3? Do you know?
I actually think I might be. I don't know. We might have to do that.
I'm hearing a person who appreciates beauty and knows how to work it and knows how to work a room if she wants to, mm-hmm. and who also, has learned to be in herself and to not take it so seriously and to like always be like observing that part of us that wants to please others and be perceived a certain way. And so I hear a lot of like high side, the healthiest expression of type 3 over there, but who knows? We'll have to do your Enneagram in a different time. Okay. I want to thank you so much for being here today. If our guests would like to follow you and maybe reach out, what's the best way for them to do that?
I would probably just say on Instagram, I'm at 30 waves and it's spelled out THIRTYWAVES. And you can talk to me about my startup on there too. My email's on there. that's probably the best.
And how do they get their own AI boosted smart link for dating transparency from Scoop?
If they message me, I can have them be a part of our beta group right now.
Awesome.
So if you message me.
Thank you for having me. We'll put all that in the show notes. Please do also check out the bonus episode of me beginning with no makeup on, looking pretty scraggly, and Brittany guides me through her makeup routine and I try to emulate it on my own self. My own 43-year-old self.
Gorgeous.
Thank you so much. I was loving hanging out with you.
Yeah,
okay. Bye-bye.